Recording.
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
We are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 1 called Observing the Armies, text number 2. And let's read the verses and translations all the way up to text number 11. Please repeat after me. Sanjayo vacha.
Sanjayo vacha.
Drishtva tu pandavanikam.
Drishtva tu pandavanikam.
Vyudham duryodhanastada.
Vyudham duryodhanastada.
Acharyam upasangamya.
Acharyam upasangamya.
Raja vachanam abravi. Sanjay said, O king, after looking over the army arranged in military formation by the sons of Pandu, King Duryodhana went to his teacher and spoke the following words. 3. Pashyaitan Pandu Putranam Acharya Mahitim Chamun Vyudham Drupada Putrena Tava Shishena Dhimata. O my teacher, behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Drupad. Atrashura Maheshwasa. Bhimarjuna Samayudhi. Yuyudhano Viratascha. Drupadascha Maharatha. Here in this army are many heroic bowmen, equal in fighting to Bhima and Arjun, great fighters like Yuyudhana, Virata, and Drupada. Drishtaketuschekitana. Kashirajascha Viryavan. Purujit Kunti Bhojascha. There are also great heroic, powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Jekitana, Kashiraja, Purujit, Kuntibhoja, and Shaibya. Yudha Manyushcha Vikranta, Uttamaujascha Viryavan. Sobhadro Draupadeyascha Sarva Eva Maharatha. There are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamoja, the son of Subhadra and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters. Asmakam tu Vishishtaye Tannibodha Dvijottama Nayaka mama sainyasya Sangnyartham tan bravimite. But for your information, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. Bhavan Bhishmascha Karnascha Kripascha Samitim Jaya. Ashwatthama Vikarnascha. Somadattistathaivacha. There are personalities like you, Bhishma, Karna, Kripa, Ashwatthama, Vikarna, and the son of Somadatta called Bhurishava, who are always victorious in battle. Anyecha bahava shura. Madarthe tyakta jivita. Nana shastra praharana. Sarve yuddha visharada. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. Aparyaptam tadasmakam. Balam bhishma bhirakshitam. Paryaptam tvidam metesham. Balam bhima bhirakshitam. Our strength is immeasurable, and we are perfectly protected by Grandfather Bhishma, whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. Ayaneshu cha sarveshu yathabhagam avasthita bhishmameva bhirakshantu bhavanta sarvaevahi. All of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma as you stand at your respective strategic points of entrance into the phalanx of the army. And let us go back to text number 2, the first one we read. And the translation interpreted again by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. Sanjay said, O King, after looking over the army arranged in military formation by the sons of Pandu, King Duryodhana went to his teacher and spoke the following words. Purport. Dhritarashtra was blind from birth. Unfortunately, he was also bereft of spiritual vision. He knew very well that his sons were equally blind in the matter of religion, and he was sure that they could never reach an understanding with the Pandavas, who were all pious since birth. Still, he was doubtful about the influence of the place of pilgrimage, and Sanjay could understand his motive in asking about the situation on the battlefield. Sanjay wanted, therefore, to encourage the despondent king, and thus assured him that his sons were not... that his sons were not going to make any sort of compromise under the influence of the holy place. Sanjay therefore informed the king that his son Duryodhana, after seeing the military force of the Pandavas, at once went to the commander-in-chief Dronacharya to inform him of the real position. Although Duryodhana is mentioned as the king, he still had to go to the commander on account of the seriousness of the situation. He was therefore quite fit to be a politician. But Duryodhana's diplomatic veneer could not disguise the fear he felt when he saw the military arrangement of the Pandavas. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Vinatayam Paramahandamadhavam.
Here we are in verse 2 of Bhagavad Gita called Observing the Armies. I want to begin first with a general question, in that sometimes when we give people the Bhagavad Gita to read, then we sometimes say, read the introduction and then you can begin with chapter 2. Because for a lot of people, chapter 1 becomes a long list of names that becomes really incomprehensible and difficult to make heads or tails of. And the real philosophy, of course, Krishna's instruction begins with verse 11 of chapter 2. So we sometimes recommend, therefore, you should just start with chapter 2. So the question arises as to what the point of this chapter 1 is, especially of this first part of chapter 1, where you get a long list of names of fighters. Because you might think, well, this is, you know, obviously Bhagavad Gita is part of the Mahabharata. So why start the Bhagavad Gita with this chapter? Why not just start it with chapter 2? Why include this within it? Just let this be part of the rest of the fighting section of the Bhagavad Gita. Chandipu? Exactly. So this first chapter is setting the context. And that's very, very important. Perhaps for those people who simply see the Bhagavad Gita as some kind of abstract philosophical presentation, which is all allegorical to begin with, right? Some people say the Gita, the chariot is the body and Arjuna is the soul and Krishna is the intelligence speaking to the soul and Kurukshetra is the world itself. And those who just take it in an abstract, allegorical manner, maybe for such persons, the first chapter is useless. But we don't take Bhagavad Gita like this, because that's not the proper way to take it. Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between two individuals, between Krishna and Arjuna. And the context, the setting for that conversation is very, very important to understand the power of Bhagavad Gita. Without that, we can't really appreciate the full impact of what Krishna is saying, because we don't understand what Arjuna is going through, what the advice is meant for. Krishna is giving advice in a very, very particular situation. And this is a very intense situation that he's speaking to. Right? And when we understand the intensity of this situation, then we can appreciate the force of Krishna's instruction. How powerful that instruction is. Like when I'm teaching my students, right, I ask them to... The first thing we do is I talk about the setting of the Bhagavad Gita. And I ask them to visualize themselves in this situation. Right? To visualize what they might see if they were there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And it's a very powerful story. Right? When I tell them, you know, just imagine two armies, 640 million people. Right? First of all, that number itself is mind-blowing. You can't imagine so many people. Imagine all these people situated in one place. The largest gathering in the world, Kumbh Mela, gets, 40 million people or something like that. Right? Imagine 640 million people in one location. Imagine one army that's, 4 times or 10 times the size of the other army. I forget what it was. Duryodhana's army was multiple times bigger than Arjuna's army. Right? The Kauravas were so much... So even though both armies were so huge, in front of the Kauravas' army, they were so big that Arjuna's army was looking like, if you were to fly over and take a bird's eye view of the whole scene, like you would see one really small army and one huge army. Of course, both sides have tens of millions of fighters, so no one's small, but relatively speaking. And there, you can imagine that this whole fight is between brothers, right? So everyone looks like everyone else. Everyone's related in this battlefield. Someone's connected by close relationship of brothers. Some are connected through uncles or aunts, some are cousins, and some are distant relatives, like through marriage and things like that. So cousins of your wife or something. So but everyone's related somehow or other. There's connections through this whole battlefield. But the connections go across the line of war. This is a civil war. It's a fratricidal war. And you can just imagine that the entire burden for the fighting on one side rests upon the shoulders of these five brothers. They're the ones who are leading the fight, for whom it's happening. the five Pandavas. And even amongst them, everyone knows that the whole burden of that fight rests upon the shoulders of Arjuna, of one of the brothers. Because everyone knows that he's the only one who can actually make his way through this huge army and stay alive. Everyone's very eager, everyone's very powerful, everyone's willing to help. But ultimately, when push comes to shove, the entire burden of this whole battle rests upon Arjuna. So imagine that scenario, where he's faced with killing hundreds of millions of people. He knows that the burden of these people's deaths will be on him. Not only are they so many millions of people, but they're all his friends and all his family, everyone he knows by name, basically. Imagine fighting a war like that, where every person on the other side, on the other line, was someone you knew by name. We know that the most painful types of fights in this world, right, are fights within the family. That's perhaps, you can fight with anyone outside, but when you fight with someone in the family, that type of pain is not matched. It's unmatched by any type of pain in this world. Right? Now, just think. Arjun was not only fighting in the family, he was asked to kill everyone in his family. And he knew that those who were supporting him are going to be killed as well. Right? No one had any doubt that people on both sides are going to be slaughtered, regardless of who wins. Imagine the pain that is associated with that kind of a fight. So, at that point, when you realize, okay, Arjun is breaking down, he's having an emotional, mental, physical, every type of breakdown is happening, a crisis of identity, then you realize, okay, then when Krishna speaks, you understand this is, you know, you understand the power of what Krishna is saying. That he's not addressing this is not some casual conversation around in France, there was this famous a group of thinkers, I forget, or not in France, in Vienna, a famous group of thinkers called the, what was it called? The Vienna Circle or something like that. A lot of great philosophical minds were born from that. A group of people would gather in a coffee shop around a round table, and they'd sit and they'd talk about all kinds of intelligent things. And some of the greatest philosophical minds were produced from this time. This is not some kind of relaxed over coffee conversation. You know, they come up with brilliant philosophical ideas, which people study and stuff. That type of philosophy looks pale in front of this. Right? This is no sit down, relax, and speculate about the nature of the world with nothing at stake. Those people had nothing at stake. Right? They had everything they needed. They had a cup of coffee to keep them going, and they're just relaxing and speculating about the world, what the world is. That's not the type of philosophy we're talking about here. This is philosophy at the brink of war. This is philosophy with people's lives at stake. This is philosophy that if it were not to work, people would actually live, they would be saved. And if this philosophy is accepted, people are going to be killed, they're going to die. So there's a lot at stake in this. You know, Krishna has to be really sure, you have to be really sure that the person you're listening to in this Bhagavad Gita better be dependable. Otherwise, there's going to be hundreds of millions of lives lost. This is a high-stakes philosophical conversation. And therefore, we have to remember that the Bhagavad Gita is ultimately a practical book. It's a practical text. It's not, like Prabhupada says so many times, an armchair philosophy. When I describe the scene to my students, they're completely, like, overtaken by it. Every ear, every face is just focused on this scene. All of them are imagining it. It's a very, very powerful thing. And then you say, this is the most important book that India has produced. And they know, okay, this is why. This is the reason. How could you find a more intense situation for a spiritual conversation? And then on the most recent exam, I asked them, one of the questions was, imagine you were on the battlefield just before the Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Describe what you would see. And basically everyone got that answer, right? Right? How can you forget a scene like this? It's not every time in storybooks that you listen to something like this. So this is why we study chapter 1. Right? This is why all these names of these fighters and warriors is very important. It's considered to be part of the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. because this is what gives us a sense of what leads to Arjuna's breakdown. And that in turn gives us an understanding as to why Krishna is going to speak Bhagavad Gita and what he's directed. So, let's see now what's happening here. Dhritarashtra has just asked Sanjay to tell us what's going on the battlefield. And Sanjay has said, okay, he'll do it. So he immediately begins the narration. Dhritarashtra's fear from the last verse, can anyone say, what was his fear when he asked Sanjay the question? Yeah, he was worried that they're going to work it out. and they're going to therefore not fight. Right? Now, like Prabhupada saying, Dhritarashtra was blind from birth, but unfortunately he was also spiritually blind. So if someone is blind from birth but has spiritual vision, like Suradas, right, then that person is perfect. Their material blindness is not an impediment. But if you're spiritually blind, then you might as well be materially blind as well. There's no room. And Duryodhan was like that. He was spiritually blind and therefore his material vision was not doing him any good. And Sanjay here assures Dhritarashtra. He says, everything's okay, don't worry. Your sons are going to fight. This battle is going to happen. Why? Because Duryodhan is now going to consult his commander-in-chief, Dronacharya, his teacher. Now, the point that Prabhupada makes several times in these purports is that Duryodhana is a very expert politician. He calls him a politician, he calls him a diplomat, I think a statesman also once. In many ways, Duryodhana has very many good qualities. He's actually very qualified as a politician or a leader. He knows how to bring people together. He knows how to incite people to anger. He knows how to divide people. He knows how to punish. He knows all the skills that are required of a strong leader. In that, he actually had no shortcoming. That was not the reason, his disqualification was not the reason why Krishna did not want him on the throne. The reason, of course, was spiritual. He was an irreligious person. He was against the Lord and his devotees. But materially speaking, he was quite well qualified. And each one of these verses, they demonstrate the great skill that Duryodhan had, the skill with which he managed the emotions and egos of all the people on the battlefield. Now just think, these are the greatest warriors that the world has ever seen. The most powerful people of the time are present on the battlefield. These are people who will have very, very powerful egos. Right? People who think a lot of themselves, and very rightly so, because they are the very best in the world. Right? If these fighters think, if they're proud, they have a reason to be proud. They are the very best. And to get all of them to work under one person's command, the commander is, of course, Dronacharya here, but ultimately the commander is Duryodhan. It's all happening because of him. He's the one who has to motivate all, 400 million people who are behind him. So in order to manage those egos and get them to work under his command, that's not an easy task. We're not talking about little warriors that you can threaten into fighting. These are people who have come here of their own accord and are fighting for different reasons also. They each have different fights with different people on the other side. They're not all there just because they're completely loyal to Duryodhan. They've got their multiple motivations to being there, and we'll see some of the motivations as we come across. But the essential point is Duryodhan has to manage this. And this takes a lot of skill, how to deal with people who have, just like you look at professors or executives of big companies. How do you get them together and get them to do something? It takes a lot of management skill, a lot of diplomacy, a lot of political finesse. And that's what Duryodhan will display in these verses. Okay. So, the first verse here, the third one, the first one where he speaks. He says, Pashyetam Panduputranam Acharya Mahitim Chamum Vyudham Drupada Putrena Tavashyashena Dhimata. What's the first thing that you need to know in order to win a battle?
what's the most important thing that you have to have a good grasp of?
Your enemy, exactly. The strength of your enemy. You should never underestimate your enemy's power. So, as a very wise warrior, he's now going to his commander-in-chief and he's making sure that Dronacharya has a clear idea of what the enemy's strength is. He's doing a rundown. So no one underestimates the power of the enemy. But in order to do that, the first thing he has to do is motivate his commander. He has to motivate his greatest fighters to fight. And he knows how to do this. So he says, "O my teacher, behold the great army of the sons of Pandu, so expertly arranged by your intelligent disciple, the son of Dhruva." What's Duryodhana's weakest point in this battle, in his whole setup to fight? What's his weak point? Ian? Okay. that's the ultimate point. He doesn't appreciate Krishna. That's true. There's no doubt about that. More kind of materially speaking, on the ground. We'll see in these verses that actually he's not overconfident. He knows how strong the other guys are. Right? This is why he's doing this rundown. But he knows also that he's got a weak point. Exactly. His best fighters are who? Drona and Bhishma. Right? These are the best. I mean, you look at Bhishma Dev, talking about the best in the world, people who deserve to be proud. Of course, he's a devotee of the Lord. He's a Mahajan, so he doesn't have those problems. But look at him, right? He's been here for generations already. He can die at will, so no one can scare him into fighting, right? There's no fear involved here. He's been able to defeat practically everyone. He's born from Mother Ganga herself. This person, he's been brahmachari from birth. That in itself gives you so much power. He's seen it all. He's weathered through everything. How are you going to push such a person to fight? Like, what are you going to do to them? You're going to scare them, or you're going to chastise them? You can't do anything for such a person, right? Also, Drona, he's the greatest teacher. He's the teacher of Duryodhana also. How is he supposed to go to Dronacharya and tell him to fight? His two greatest warriors are Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya. And both of them have sympathies towards the Pandavas. This was a well-known fact by that time. Dronacharya's favorite student is Arjun. He's given, blessed him already. You're going to be the best archer in the world. And Bhishma Dev, of course, from childhood, he's had a special affection for the Pandavas. For one thing, they're all devotees of Krishna, and Bhishma Dev himself is a devotee of Krishna. And secondly, the five sons have been fatherless from a very early age. So he feels he's throughout their lives he's been specially protective of the five Pandavas. So naturally he has a special affection for them. And Duryodhana knows this very well. Right? He knows. So this is an extremely problematic point. You're fighting a battle. Your two best people are emotionally sold out to your enemies. So what are they going to do when they show up to fight? Right? That arrow which can hit someone's chest and kill them, right, or cut off someone's neck. Right? How are you going to fire that arrow? It's like you see, like on these films and stuff, people with a gun, right? When it actually comes to pulling the trigger, people cop out. They can't do it. You can't pull the trigger. It's too, just killing someone is such frightening. But imagine if it's someone, your favorite student, Arjun, right? Or your dearest five little boys that you've seen grown up. Your favorite boys. How are you going to do that? Jonathan?
There's a similar circumstance in the
Right. 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 So they're all here on the battlefield because of duty, right? What's their duty here? What's the duty involved? To find another king. Right, right. But why are they fighting on Duryodhana side?
Because he's paid.
Right. Exactly. So they're indebted to him. They've been supported by him. Bhishma's sworn to protect the throne. And right now on the throne is Dhritarashtra, who's obviously in favor of Duryodhana. So the way he understands it, his duty is to fight with Duryodhana. Dronacharya feels obligated, okay, because he's been living off the Kauravas for his life. So it's their duty.
Did you have that?
Okay. So it's because of their duty, they're here. And this is a very powerful thing, of course, duty. It's in and of itself, it's pretty much sufficient to make sure these people will fight. Because it's been tested already. Their sense of duty has already been tested. And they came out faithful to Duryodhana. What was the test to their sense of duty that was put on? Yes. When Draupadi was being attempted to be disrobed in the whole arena, right? At that point she came begging to each one of the senior members of that assembly, Dronacharya, Bhishma Dev, Kripacharya, Dhritarashtra, all the members who were seated there, she came begging them to do something, and they all remained silent. They silently watched the insult of Draupadi. So, I mean, what could be a better display for Duryodhana that these people will be loyal? That's a pretty strong display also. When the wife of the Pandavas is being humiliated, they were all silent. So he's fairly confident already. Right? The duty, they'll do their duty. But still, he wants to make sure that the emotions of these two people don't play a role in them being a little bit soft towards the Pandavas when they actually fight. Now, so in this verse here, Duryodhana begins by trying to motivate his teacher, Dronacharya. He starts by saying, look at the commander-in-chief on the other side. The commander-in-chief was who? Drishtadyumna. Drishtadyumna was the commander of the Pandavas. But he doesn't call him Drishtadyumna here. What does he call him? What's the name he gives him? Drupada Putrena, right? The son of Drupada. Why does he call him the son of Drupada? Ian? Almost. It's actually the opposite. He wants to get on Dronacharya's nerves. Okay. And the way to... See, he wants to upset Dronacharya. Okay. He wants to make sure he's upset. Actually, Drupada is the father.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like an insult. Uh-huh. You can't speak the person's name, so whether you say your name, and this isn't. Because I'm trying to do something to get on the skin. So it's a way to lessen the value of power. Uh-huh.
Okay, that's an interesting point. I'd have to think about that a little bit. It's very, very common in language of warriors, in Sanskrit at least, to refer to them by their parentage, and it's usually seen as an honor. So, Yeah, he's called Partha, the son of Pitta. Nataraj? Right. Exactly. So, right. So they had an old fight, an enmity, Drupada and Dronacharya. And the story of this, of course, is very interesting. For those of us who don't know, these two went to the same Gurukul, Drona and Drupada. And Dronacharya was, of course, from a Brahmin family, and he was very poor. Drupad was a prince, and he was naturally very rich. But they became very, very good friends in school, best of buddies. But so at one point, in their friendship, as they were kind of leaving, ready to leave the ashram of the guru, Drupad, he promised Dronacharya. He said, "One day when I become king, I'll give you half the kingdom because you're just like my brother." And so, Drona just kept those words in his mind and they parted ways. At some point when Dronacharya got married and he had his son, then they were so destitute that they did not have any milk even for their son. And the son would cry for milk. So in a time of desperation, Dronacharya remembered the promise that Drupad had made him. And so he went to the court of King Drupad and he begged him for a cow. He said, "Can I please have it?" Not half the kingdom, he just said, he promised me half the kingdom, he won't have a problem giving me a cow. He said, "Please give me a cow so I have some milk." But Drupad, he insulted him. Drona reminded him of his friendship, and Drupad said, he started laughing. He said, Friendship can only happen between equals. What kind of person are you? You're completely poor and destitute. How could there be possibly friendship between me, a great king, and you, an ordinary?" And so he insulted him and said, "I don't even know you. Get out of here." And Dronacharya was so angry. Especially, you're assuming something is coming from a friend and in front of others. So he vowed that he would get revenge. And years later, when he became the guru of the Kauravas and the Pandavas, he was their Astra guru, teaching them how to fight. Then at the end, when it's time at the end of the instruction, you have to give guru dakshina. You have to give some gift to the guru. This is kind of like payment for your studies, but it's not demanded, it's given voluntarily. I mean, you ask the guru, "What would you like?" So they asked Dronacharya, he said, "What would you like for guru dakshina?" And Dronacharya said, "I want you to tie up Drupad and bring him here to me." And so they all said, okay. So first the Kaurava said, "We can offer this. We can offer this to our guru, no problem." And they all went charging off, all 100 of them, to fight. Huh? With an army. Yeah, you're right. They had the king's army. Right? So they went with Hastinapur's army. And Drupad was no ordinary person, right? So he easily defeated these 100 brothers. And they all came back humiliated. And of course, Dronacharya is even further humiliated by this. Because you make an attempt at revenge, and your 100 disciples, there they come. So he said, then Arjun came forward. And he said, "Gurudev, I can do this for you. We can do this for you." And so they went off. And they brought him back successfully, all tied up. Just them five, right, without the army. They brought him back in front of Dronacharya. And Dronacharya says, "It's nice to see an old friend. Welcome to my house. I don't know, do you recognize me now? That day when I came to you in the court, you didn't recognize me. Perhaps you recognize me now, or maybe not even now. These people who just fought you, they're my disciples." So he says, "I don't need anything, actually. I just want to make sure you keep your promise. I want to save you from the problem of being dishonest. And I'll take half of your kingdom, and you can keep the other half and go home." So, of course, then Drupad was furious because he was humiliated. This is how it goes amongst Kshatriyas, right? Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He was humiliated. And he said, he did this fire sacrifice to get a son who would kill Dronacharya. And he did, and he got a son and a daughter. The son was named Drishtadyumna, and the daughter was Draupadi. They were both born from the fire. Both had a fiery personality and a brilliance and a beauty that's like fire. Right. Still, he was. This was actually part of his fault in that coming to the war of Kurukshetra war, is that he was acting as a Kshatriya.
Five Pandavas married Draupadi.
Right.
Didn't Draupadi have a problem with that? Because his daughter's son in the heavens.
I was thinking about this actually just when I was preparing for the class. I thought, now imagine getting tied up by Arjun and then getting your daughter married to Arjun. But see, Drupad had something far bigger in mind. He wanted to kill Drona. And what this meant is that he had the Pandavas as his allies forever. Because through marriage, right? That's one of the strongest forms of alliances between Kshatriyas is through marriage. So he knew, okay, now the Pandavas, these five brothers who, you know, he knew by personal experience how powerful they were. Right? These are on my side. And so naturally, they're not going to, fight against. So this history was there, right? Like, back and forth, back and forth. This is how it goes. Material enmity, material fighting. Prahlad Maharaj speaks about this in 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that this idea, someone is my friend, someone is my enemy, this is simply a creation of the mind. There's no physical. These people had certain ideas of anger and vengeance in them. And so back and forth it was going, back and forth. And the whole kind of story of the Mahabharata is playing out this problematic between the two. And there's so many stories of vengeances back and forth that all come to a head here in this battlefield of Kurukshetra. This is why it was such a powerful battle. Remember I said, not everyone is here because they love Duryodhan. And not everyone is here because they're fighting for the Pandavas. People have different motivations for fighting. Drishtadyumna is here because he has to fulfill the mission of his life, the reason he was born, which is to kill Drona. So he's got a very powerful motivation that goes beyond fighting for his brother-in-law. That's one motivation, but much stronger one. He has to fulfill what the mission he was born for, which is to kill Drona. So, yeah, Ian? Yeah, but basically he was the catalyst for his death. Right? In that, he did the act in the end. I mean, he chopped off the head. Right? The point was he had to see Drona dead. And you're right in that this was meant to happen. But that made it all the more powerful. He knew he was destined to do this. Right? So when the opportunity came to take up becoming the commander for the Pandavas, he took it. He grabbed it immediately. And he stayed the commander all the way through. Duryodhana comes to Dronacharya, he says, Drupada Putrena, he says, look it on the other side, look who's commanding. It's the son of your old friend, Drupad. But it doesn't end there. The story doesn't end there. When Drishtadyumna grows up, then he looks for a teacher to learn. And, of course, who does his father send him to learn? His old friend, Drupada. Okay. Oh, sorry, Dronacharya. He says, you go learn from him. And Dronacharya, he says, yes. And Prabhupada explains that this is the liberality of a Brahmana. Right. That even if he was willing, if he was wanting to kill, he knew that this person is destined to kill me. Still, he was ready to give him knowledge. And Prabhupada says this is like the sun. A liberal Brahmana is compared to the sun. Right? The sun shines everywhere. It does not withhold its light, even from the courtyard of a thief. A thief doesn't deserve the light of the sun. He works in the dark. He gives suffering to people in the dark. But he gives that... he shines his light even in the courtyard of it. So he instructed him and instructed him very, very well. Gave up all his military secrets basically to Drishtadyumna. So again, he's saying, look, on the other side, there's the person. Look at your mistake. You knew very well. From the viewpoint of a Kshatriya, what he did was stupid. It was crazy. Like a Kshatriya thinks, why would you give away your secrets to your enemy? What a foolish thing to do. So he's looking at him and he's saying, look at this foolish thing you did.
Now that very person who was destined to kill you stands armed with the knowledge you gave him, and he's come to kill us all. So, don't become weak in your fighting. He's working up the anger of Dronacharya. And when you become angry, that's the only way you can fight, right? When you become, he's working up that anger and saying, okay, then it won't matter who's in front of him, Arjuna's or Pandavas or anyone. When you're worked up and you're angry, he's going to fight very well. Now, okay, so here he is, the great diplomat. Next verse. Atrashura Maheshvasa Bhimarjuna Samayuhi Yuyodhano Viratascha Drupadascha Maharatha. So he says, okay, now let me give you a list of fighters on their side. All these fighters, he says, are equal in battle to Bhima and Arjun. They're equal in prowess. The two biggest names on the other side are Bhima and Arjun. Drona and Bhishma on this side, Bhima and Arjun on this side. Why does he mention Bhima first? Bhima Arjuna Samayudhi. Ian? Bhima is his greatest rival, and he's also the most afraid of Bhima. Why? Why is he more afraid of Bhima than he is of Arjuna? That's right. I see. Okay, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. It's the first time I've heard that. They're all born under the same star, five individuals. And if one of them kills another, then that one will kill all the others, all the other four. So Bhima killed Hidimb, he killed Kichak, he killed Duryodhana. Now, but there's something even more concrete that says that Bhima is going to kill. Yeah, he vowed. He made three vows. What were his three vows he had made before the fight? One, Srinivas just said, he's going to kill all 100 brothers. He's going to pluck out the Dushasana's heart and drink his blood. Yeah? Exactly. He's going to smash Duryodhana's thigh. He also promised to tear off Dushasana's arm, but we count that as the part of the tearing out of his heart. Ian? No. When Kshatriyas make a vow, then they're going to do everything possible to make sure it happens. Either he's going to be successful or Bhima has to be killed. One of the two. There's no third choice. This is why he's especially afraid, because he knows he's the target for Bhima and all his brothers, specifically. Right? The Pandavas had other opportunities to kill the 100 brothers at various points in the battle, but they refrained from doing it just so Bhima could get to fulfill his vow. Of killing all 100, one after another. Gopal? Indeed. Yes. The pure devotees of the Lord are not pacifists. Prabhupada makes that point several times. He says the world's greatest fighters were Vaishnavas. Both in the fight between Ram and Ravan, the greatest fighters were Vaishnavas, and in the fight between Duryodhana and the Kauravas and Pandavas, the greatest fighters were Vaishnavas. Vaishnavas take up arms. Prabhupada has one line in Bhagavad Gita. He says, sometimes violence becomes necessary when all good reason and argument fail. So there is such a thing called just war, war that is just. And this is an instance of it. Bhima made, of course, Bhima's approach is a little bit gruesome. Right? That has to be said. but basically the point is that he had made these vows in response to very particular things. Duryodhana had invited Draupadi to sit on his lap. He said, okay, I'm going to break your thigh. He had
Dushasana had touched the hair and the clothing of Draupadi, he says, okay, I'm going to tear out your arm and your heart. And these 100 sons, of course, were to be killed anyway. So, he mentions Bhima first. Bhima Arjuna Samayuti. Yuyudhano Virataśca Drupadascha. Okay, so then he mentions a few others. Now, note here again, he mentions Yuyudhan, Virat, and then who does he mention? Drupada. It's kind of obvious. He's already mentioned Drupada once. In the sense, you know, by the first mention, Drupada Putrena, the son of Drupada is here. Dronacharya is going to know that Drupada is here as well. He knows who's on the battlefield. The reminder has been given. But yet again, he takes the opportunity to put in the name of Drupada and say, oh, Drupada is here as well, and of course he's a great fighter. So he's just digging it in and twisting, right, to make sure that he's inciting Drona as much as possible. Okay, next one. Drishtaketushche kitana kashi rajashche viryavan purujit kunti bojashcha shaibyashcha narapungava. There are also great heroic powerful fighters like Drishtaketu, Chekitana, Kashiraja, Purujit, Kuntibhoj, and Shaibya. Yudhamanyushcha Vikranta Uttamojashcha Viryavan Sobhadro Draupadeyashcha Sarva Eva Maharatha. There are the mighty Yudhamanyu, the very powerful Uttamoja, the son of Subhadra and the sons of Draupadi. All these warriors are great chariot fighters. Now these are all called Maharathas by Duryodhana. And this is actually a technical term in fighting. There are different categories of fighters. And the biggest category are Maharathas. Maharathas are those who can fight with 10,000 or more fighters at one time. They can keep 10,000 at bay. Below them are Atirathas. They can keep less than 10,000 at bay at once. There's a little bit of confusion about that. One place it says that Atirathas are more, one place it says it's less. So I'm not 100% clear about that. That's something to research more, I guess. And then below them are simply the Rathas or the Rathis. And they can fight with one guy at a time. Okay, equals. Yeah, Ekarathas they're called, one fighters. And then below them there's another category. They're called, Ardharathas, thank you, exactly. They need help to fight. They can't fight alone. They need half a chariot they can handle. But of course there are no half chariots, so they need two people to fight one. Abhimanyu, he was what? Maharathi. It took, what, 7 or 11? Some major number of Maharathis to bring him down, right? So each Maharathi, these people who are being named, was able to fight with 10,000. It took 7 of them to bring down Abhimanyu. This person was really a Maharathi. He was very powerful. Here we go. There's interesting things coming up. For your information, O best of the Brahmanas, let me tell you about the captains who are especially qualified to lead my military force. He says, Asmakam tu vishishtaye tan nivodhad vijottama nayaka mama sainyasya. My sena. Right? Let me tell you now, my force. So, just so people don't get too discouraged. It says that when the Acharyas tell us that when Duryodhana starts speaking to Dronacharya, then all the other major warriors of his side all came together to listen to what he has to say. This is like, you know, in football games, there's the huddle before a game or in the middle of a game where everyone kind of says, okay, what's our next strategy? What are we going to do? You got 30. So this is the huddle before the fight. Everyone's coming in and saying, okay, Duryodhana has a message for all of us. He's working everyone up like the coach in the locker rooms. We can do it. Go, go, go. So he's saying, first of all, don't underestimate your opponent. These are major people. But don't get discouraged. We've got really powerful people as well. Okay. He says, who are the people on our side? Bhavan bhishmascha karnascha kripascha samitim jaya ashwatthama vikarnascha soma dattis tathaivacha. Now, he's giving a list of fighters. The two greatest on his side are, of course, Bhishma and Drona. They're both senior. One is like his grandfather's grandfather. The other is his own teacher. Who should he name first? Again, these are people with big egos. This is a political situation. Protocol is a big thing. So he's listing the fighters. These two have to come first. Who should he mention first? Drona or Bhishma? Why? Okay. But but Drona's the guru. So shouldn't you pay obeisance to guru first? In fact, he pays obeisances first to who? Or names, not obeisances, names who first? His guru. He says, Bhavan, you, Drona. He was very, very intelligent, very cunning. How to make both people satisfied? He calculated that if he said Bhishma first, Drona might get upset. For one thing, he's the teacher, he's the guru. For the other thing, Drona is what? In compared, huh? He's a Brahmana, and Bhishma is a Kshatriya. So if he says Drona first, he knows Bhishma Dev won't get upset because the proper protocol is you greet a Brahmana before you greet a Kshatriya. So even despite the fact that Bhishma, you could argue, was a more powerful warrior, but he feels safe in doing this. So again, Prabhupada says, he's a great diplomat. He's very expert at this stuff. He knows what to do. He says, Bhavan, you first. Bhishma, then he says. Then the third one is Karna. Why mention Karna here? He's the best friend. Yeah, but how is it going to help in this political situation? He's going to fight against Arjun. Ian? Exactly. So remember, he's getting it under everyone's skin to motivate them. So he just motivated Drona. Now he's going to motivate Bhishma. Okay. Bhishma and Karna don't get along very well together. Okay. They've always had a problem. In fact, Karna is not even present on the battlefield at this time. Or he's not fighting, at least. Maybe he's watching, but he's not doing anything. There's different versions of this. Why? One version says that Bhishma said that he doesn't want Karna fighting on the battlefield. Bhishma thought very lowly of Karna. For one thing, he was known to be a Sudputra. He was known not to be even a Kshatriya. Secondly, he found him to be a very low-class person, because of the comments he made towards Draupadi and so forth in the arena. So he asked him, he's not going to fight. As long as I'm commander, as long as I'm fighting on the battlefield, he's not going to fight. Another version of the story says that Karna himself did not want to fight. Why? Because he... Exactly. Very good. Super. Because he's thinking, I'm going to kill all these warriors. He's the best. He's actually better than Arjun. But he says, I'm going to kill all these warriors, and this old man's going to get all the credit. This is exactly what the acharyas say. They say, this is his thinking, right? He didn't think very highly of Drona either, of Bhishma Dev either. They both had a problem. So he mentions Karna here, just to incite Bhishma Dev a little bit. Get his blood flowing, get him angry. Because he's just working them up, right? He's just getting them upset or getting them angry. So he makes sure he fights.
In your competitive spirit, when you name somebody who's a computer with you, kind of says, I want to beat him.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to kill. Who says only Karna will kill? I'm going to do it too.
Or why you even mentioned my name with Karna?
Yeah.
I'm going to be so much better than you.
Exactly. Exactly. Why did you even mention Karna here? Right. He's not even a Kshatriya. Yeah. Of course, Bhishma knew the reality. Then Kripa Acharya and Ashwatthama. Why is he mentioning Kripa and Ashwatthama? Yeah.
Because Kripa is brother-in-law, and Ashwatthama is his son.
Okay, this guy's got all the answers. Okay, we're not going to ask you anymore. You'll take the fun out for everyone else. Kripa, exactly. Kripa is the brother-in-law. How's he the brother-in-law? Who's... Yes. Dronacharya's wife is Kripi, who is the sister of Kripacharya. And Ashwatthama is, of course, the son. So why is he mentioning these two people? Yeah, they're blood relatives. And what is he calling them? Maharathas, right? So he's encouraging, your people, Ashwatthama, I know he's a great fighter. What? Naturally, the father feels proud. Yes, my son, he's a Maharatha. Right? And he's also mentioning Kripacharya, who's also his relative. Right? So he's working on this. He knows, okay, if you want to succeed, focus on your key men. Right? These are the key men who are going to make you succeed. So Drona, Bhishmadev, especially Dronacharya, he's working on. He's saying Kripa and Ashwatthama, mention these two, their relatives. And then the last person he mentions is Vikarna. Who is Vikarna? Was he step? Was he? Yeah? Okay. That's cute. Yeah, okay. So he's a brother. Huh? Brother, stepbrother, or whatever. Ian? No, not getting on his nerves, okay? Why is he mentioning Vikarna? You see, Vikarna is one of his brothers, right? He's got 100 of them. And Dushasana is far more powerful than Vikarna is. Why is he not mentioning Dushasana? Why is he mentioning Vikarna especially? Right, to bring him on his side, to actually encourage him or praise him. So get him on his nerves in a positive way. He wants to inflate his ego so that he doesn't defect. Okay. Because Vikarna was actually in danger of defecting. Remember we said how everyone followed their so-called duty and did not speak up when Draupadi was being mistreated. The only person who did speak up was Vikarna. He stood up in that assembly and he said, this is wrong. And he spoke up in front of his older brother, which of course broke protocol. The people who were supposed to speak, those who were senior, did not. But the guy who was younger and was not supposed to speak according to protocol, he spoke because Dharma called him. Right? So Duryodhan knows how much, what a sense of right this person has. And he's worried that at this moment he might defect. Right? The danger of defection was always there before a fight began. Maharaj Yudhishthira made an announcement to the kings. Right, present there. He said, anyone who wants to change sides can do so now, before the fight. But once the fight begins, then there's no defection. You fight unto death, or you fight to victory, one of the two. So there's no changing sides then. There's no traitors. But now, before the fight begins, you're more than welcome to change sides. And Vikarna was in danger of doing so. So he's inflating his ego. There's no reason to include Vikarna in this list of who? Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya, this is just the top names in the fight, is including little Vikarna. It's just, again, to make sure he's very expert, right? This is a Duryodhana appreciation class. Right? He's so good. He knows exactly what his weak points are. And he's plugging each of the holes, each of the weak points he's got to make sure that this is sealed tight, the fight he's got. And the last one is Soma Dattis, or Bhuri Shava, of whom I know nothing. Maybe Ian does. Yeah. Oh, I see. He had a fight with Arjuna.
No. Arjuna eventually killed him. He had been friends with Arjuna.
Oh, I see.
And because of all these bad things, he wanted to fight Arjuna. And Arjuna is very powerful generals, and his father is generals. Grisha's father had him argue, and his general's father had to get Grisha's father against Grisha's father. Pretty much the same thing as your mother and Drona asked that he be a son would be a good idol.
Wow. Natasha, did you have? The movie shows someone defecting. Who was it? Do you know?
It was a stepbrother. I think it was either Nidamanyu or
Because Vikarna was actually killed by Bhima. No. I don't know, I think he was killed because. But then doesn't it show in the movie also that Bhima is killing Vikarna, and he even says, "I feel really bad doing this because you're the only one who spoke up." Yeah, that's my source of knowledge here. Huh? He killed Vikarna. Yeah. Yeah. I remember that from the movie too. I don't remember the book, but you've read the book, I think. Obviously. Okay. So let's get through this quickly here. The list of fighters. Anye cha bahava shura madarthe tyakta jivita nana shastra praharana sarve yuddha visharadaham. There are many other heroes who are prepared to lay down their lives for my sake. All of them are well equipped with different kinds of weapons, and all are experienced in military science. Now, the only point I have to make here is. He says, there's all these other fighters. He says, mad arthe tyakta jivita. Mad arthe, for my purpose, for my cause. Tyakta jivita. Now, literally in Sanskrit, this means, those who have given up their lives. See, what he means to say is how Prabhupada translates it. They're prepared to lay down their life for my sake. This is what he wants to say. But in fact, a more literal meaning of the verse is tyakta jivita, those who have given up their lives. In other words, someone who's dead is called tyakta jivita. Right? So he's saying, all these warriors here, there's thousands of warriors, they're all dead. They've all given up their lives for my sake. And of course, that's true. Right? They're already dead. How do we know that? Krishna says in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he says, right? All these people are already dead, O Arjuna. You, nimitta matra, you only have to be an instrument in the fight. I've already killed them all. And he sees them physically being devoured in the mouth of the universal form. So he knows, okay, they're all dead. Okay. Aparyaptam tadasmakam balam bhishma bhirakshitam paryaptam tvidame tesham balam bhima bhirakshitam. So here's the direct comparison that's going on. So he's just laid out the fighters on this side, on his side, and then on the Pandava side. He's given all the big names. And now he's comparing them. He said, okay, we've got these two sides. Who's more powerful? Our strength is immeasurable, he says. And we are perfectly protected by grandfather Bhishma. Whereas the strength of the Pandavas, carefully protected by Bhima, is limited. So one thing, he's getting a lot of pleasure saying this. Because he's, of course, angry at Bhima. And he's got, so he knows Bhima is the biggest fighter on that side. In Duryodhana's estimation, okay, he's the fighter of concern on that side. And the fighter of concern on this side is Bhishma Dev. He's the most powerful. So he's saying, look at Bhishma Dev. He's so much more powerful than I am, than Bhima is. Our strength is immeasurable, whereas his is very, very limited. Now, this word here, aparyaptam, this means immeasurable. There's another meaning to this word also. Means insufficient, right? Immeasurable means no end to the fight. Aparyaptam, but it can also mean insufficient, not enough. Now, here's why. Apta means obtained or gained. Pari means around, in a circle. Think of it like this. Suppose you're doing something, you're writing something down, and then you draw a circle around it. What does that mean, usually, when you draw a circle around something? It's your target, and what else? Yeah, encompassing. It's complete, basically. A circle is complete. Just like when I grade exams, I might write 85 on it, and then I circle it. There's no reason to circle it, but it just kind of signifies, okay, that's it, that's your target. This is, it's over, it's complete. This is your grade, it's 85. So, pariyaptam can mean complete. It's done. Apariyaptam can mean, it means incomplete, that which is not complete. So, the our army is insufficient. Okay. Also, pariyaptam can mean when you draw a circle around something, pariyaptam, besides meaning complete, it can also mean that this is the limit, this is the border. Just like Lakshman Rekha, when Lakshman makes that line, says, this is the border, you're not going outside of this. So apariyaptam means that which has no limit, limitless. So if you think about it visually, you can understand why the word pariyaptam in Sanskrit can mean completely opposite things. It can mean complete and it can mean limit. Actually, complete and limit, you put the, there's about the same thing, right? Something's complete, it's kind of limited, it's over, that's it. But you say, put a before it, one becomes incomplete and the other becomes unlimited, which becomes opposite meanings. So both meanings are given here. And both meanings are given by the acharyas. But they're not contradictory. They're not opposite to each other. There's no problem with them. Oftentimes, the acharyas will give different meanings to words. And seemingly, they seem opposites. But the nature of shastra, the nature of scripture, is that there's an unlimited number of meanings that can be drawn from it. There's no limit. Just like later on in this chapter, Prabhupada would say that Arjun is lamenting why? What's the reason of Arjun's lament? Miserly weakness, right? He's a materialist and he's becoming weak. But he also says another thing. Why is Arjun lamenting a word?
Compassion.
He's compassionate. He's soft-hearted, which is the quality of a Vaishnava. And you look at the two and you go, which one is it? Is he compassionate? Is he lamenting because he's weak? Or is he lamenting before he's soft-hearted? Both meanings are acceptable. Right? Shastra can draw out so many different meanings. It's like a well or a mine. You can pull so much out of it. So, apariyaptam. When he's got both people there. Right? He's got Bhishma there and he's got Drona there. Both are present in front of him. So, to Bhishma, he's saying, apariyaptam. Your power, he says, apariyaptam tadas balam. Your power, our power is unlimited because it's protected by Bhishma. But to Drona, he's saying, our power is limited. It's insufficient. Why? Because Bhishma Dev is old and he has a soft side for the Pandavas. Therefore, we have to protect him. We have to support him. And that's what you get in the next verse, right? Next verse says, all of you must now give full support to Grandfather Bhishma. So to Dronacharya, he's already warned this. He said, our strength is limited. Why? Because Bhishma Dev is old and he's soft-hearted towards the Pandavas. Therefore, he says, all of you must surround Grandfather Bhishma and protect him. Don't move. Okay? Don't allow anyone to get to Grandfather Bhishma. Because he's key in this battle, but he's got a couple of weak points, and we want to make sure we protect him. So again, he's fortifying, he's plugging all the holes in his strategy to make sure that he comes out victorious in this battle. So Prabhupada says in the purport, Duryodhana, after praising the prowess of Bhishma, further considered that others might think that they had been considered less important.
So in his usual diplomatic way, he tries to adjust the situation in the above words. Right? So, and now that he's spent all these verses focusing on Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya, he's worried, oh my God, maybe the others are going to all think like we're nothing. They're all great fighters. And they think, what are we, nothing? You know, just all your Drona and Bhishma everywhere you're saying. So he's saying, no, don't. Bhishma Dev is actually weak. I need your guys' help. Because if you don't fight, then they can get to Bhishma. And he's old. And he's soft-hearted towards them. So you please make sure you protect Grandfather Bhishma. So he's making everyone else feel like they're necessary as well, that they're useful. So he's very, very expert, Duryodhana. And he's making sure that his strategy, these are the last, like I said, like the pep talk before the game. Right? He's making sure that every one of his fighters is online, they're focused, and any problems they might have are being dealt with at this point by Duryodhana. He thinks he's got everything well set up. But next time we'll see that all his composure is going to be shattered as soon as Krishna starts blowing his conch out. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.
Just remember, Monday is Ram Nami Monday evening. Most of you got the announcement. And so please come to study. And.